Chapter 7. The superiors of the order, discerning in John of St. Matthias great talents for theological studies, combined with sublime and rare virtues, determined to send him to their college in Salamanca, that by the labor of learning he might become a laborer in the vineyard of the Lord. The college of the order in Salamanca was then known as the College of St. Andrew the Apostle, but later it was called St. Teresa's College. The school of theology in the university was celebrated throughout Europe. The Dominicans had given it professors of great names, Francis de Victoria from the University of Paris, his famous pupil, Melchor Cano, author of De Locis Theologicis, the celebrated Dominic de Soto, who assisted at the Council of Trent, and others. To this great divinity school was sent John of St. Matthias in the year 1564. He was most diligent in attending the schools, but his studies never interfered with the severity of his penitential life. The life he led in Salamanca was not less admirable than the one he had begun in Medina. Not satisfied with the fastings, abstinence, silence, and perpetual prayer commanded by the primitive rule, he added to them terrific penances. He dwelt in a very narrow and dark cell. All the light he had come through a little hole in the roof. A shallow box, more like a coffin than anything else, was his bed. In that coffin, without any covering other than his habit and a block of wood for his pillow, Fra John took his rest at night. But there was a window in his cell looking into the church. Through this window he could see the tabernacle on the altar in which our Lord was dwelling. That sight comforted him more than anything the world could show him. His cell, so poor and edifying, has always been held in great veneration, and is now one of the chapels or side altars in the church of the monastery. The primitive rule is austere enough even for souls athirst for penance, but for John of St. Matthias the burden was too light. He girt his loins with an iron chain studded with sharp points. Next to his body he wore a dress made of coarse grass, like a fisherman's net, the thick knots of which were as hard as stones. This he covered with the habit of the order. He relieved the resultant unceasing distress by the use of the most cruel disciplines, the effects of which could not always be concealed from his companions and superiors. It was a new and sharp penance to him when his secret mortifications became known to others. Prayer and austerities were the two wings of the spirit with which he made his flight to the top of the mystical Mount of Carmel. Prayer was his life, his food and nourishment. He fulfilled the great precept of the rule, to pray day and night, meditating in the law of the Lord. Though he was allowed to keep the primitive rule, he never failed to observe the minutest practice and force in the house where he was living. He never dispensed himself, nor claimed any exemption on the ground that he kept a more austere rule than his brethren. Modest, humble, and silent, he did the work he had to do. Everything was in order within him. He was regular in the house, punctual in the choir and in the schools. No duty ever interfered with another. Nor was he carried away by the love of learning for the more important work of prayer. He made the lectures he heard minister to his prayer, and in prayer he found the light which enabled him to profit by the lectures of his learned masters. Always cheerful and recollected, he was held in respect even by the turbulent youth of a great university, and by his superiors he was specially beloved. On his way to and from the university he observed angelic modesty, kept his eyes fixed on the ground and his heart in heaven, and edified his fellow students with his exterior deportment. In public disputations he spoke modestly and to the point. When he defeated in the contest, he acknowledged his opponent's skill, but was never troubled at his own failure, neither was he elated when successful in his disputations. As soon as the scholastic exercises were over, he retired to the quiet of his cell, his mind disengaged from the scholastic subtleties, and his imagination free from the diverse phantasms of contexts whose disorderly hubbub would have been an impediment to his continual prayer. On account of his marvelous virtues, he was specially loved in his own order and college, where the young looked up to him with respect, and the aged bestowed on him their esteem and affection, and all took great care not to say or do anything unseemly in his presence. In 1567, having completed his theological studies and obtained his 25th year, he was commanded by his superiors to prepare himself for the priesthood. He had shrunk from the dignity, were in the hospital of Medina del Campo, but it was not in his power now to do what he did then. He was now under obedience. So, bewailing his great unworthiness, of which he alone was conscious, he went into retreat and was ordained priest in Salamanca in the same year. As soon as he was ordained, his superior sent him back to Medina del Campo, there to sing his first mass, partly because he belonged to that convent, having taken the habit there, and partly to give pleasure to his poor mother, who had trained him in poverty and had given him to serve our Lord in poverty for the rest of his life. He came to Medina del Campo and began to prepare himself to offer up for the first time the sacrifice of the new law. He redoubled his austerities and prolonged his vigils, giving himself wholly to prayer. Always he had lived a life of detachment and purity. Now he felt that it was more necessary than ever for him to keep close to God, lest sin should come between and separate him from the only love of his soul. On the appointed day, he went up to the altar and made the great oblation. Then, holding in his hands God, his Maker, he prayed to him with all his might for grace to persevere in purity of life and never to abstain the innocence of his baptismal robe. The cry of the saint went straight to the heart of God, and John heard an inward voice saying, "Thy prayer is granted." The holy priest, overflowing with joy, full of humility and gratitude for such a favor, felt in his soul a spiritual renewal and strong conviction that God had granted him a child's purity and had confirmed him in grace as he had confirmed the holy apostles. These facts were attested by his confessors under oath and were revealed by God to the venerable Mother Anna Maria of Jesus and Beatrix of St. Michael, who made sworn affidavits of all the circumstances. This was not unknown to our Holy Mother, St. Teresa, who used to say frequently that Father John of the Cross was one of the most pure and holy souls in the Church, that God had infused in him great treasures of purity and heavenly wisdom, and that, in her opinion, he was a saint during all his life.